just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
If you mean true for you is different from true for anybody else.
Yeah,
to
absolutely,
you,
because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the internets and all that, Internetlandia. I was just looking and I realized that my show number is wrong on the video, so I was about to fix that. So, of course, we're unfortunately starting a little bit late here. This is O'Reilly Radio Show 116. We're kind of lamenting issues in Istanbul and, of course, the Brexit. We are recording Friday, July 1st, 2016. Where has the year gone? It's ridiculous. We're going to dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that should make you say, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, and I have my usual suspect, Daniel Atherton. Everyone else, unfortunately, was ill, or just out, or unavailable, or seeking wedding accommodations. So our normal correspondent, David, is out and about actually looking for venues. So, but he's also about like a year early. So we'll see how all that works out. Good luck to him.
Oh, no. I planned my wedding 2 years in advance.
Oh, boy. Well, my last wedding, you know, since that's over now, that was hey, you want to get married? Like now? Like go down to the courthouse? I believe it was a Tuesday, that kind of thing. So,
wow.
It was just so much easier to elope, really. And we saved thousands and thousands and thousands.
Well, yeah.
So that seemed to be the right course of action. 10 years, it was a good thing. No problem. So, alrighty, let's see here. So, audience feedback. We didn't have any audience feedback. Nobody sent us any emails about what we needed to do, what we needed to say, what we needed to correct, anything like that. But, you know, we do make mistakes. We are human, after all. So please, if you find a mistake, go ahead and, you know, pause the podcast if you're listening to us in that method, or just, you know, take a note otherwise and send that note to us or scream it into your phone. Send it to O'ReillyRadioPodcast@gmail.com or phone it to us at 470-222-6759. We also take text messages and, you know, you can send pictures or whatever. I don't really care. Just, I may show them on the show. So, yeah. Keep that in mind. That's all. Just keep that in mind. So, before we get into our normal show stuff, unfortunately, the Atatürk International Airport in Istanbul, it was attacked on the 28th, and at least 42 were killed, and 239 were injured by a trio of suicide bombers. The bastards that blew themselves up were identified Thursday as a Russian national, a Uzbek citizen, and another from Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan? Yeah, that. Turkey's Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said that initial indications suggested that Daesh was responsible for the attack. His words, not mine. And Turkey has been struck by a series of deadly attacks this year, including attacks in Istanbul in January, February, attacks in both Istanbul and Ankara in March, and an attack against attack targeting police in Istanbul earlier this month. I've got links to all those here in the show notes, so you can go download those and do as many deep dives as you'd like on this.
If you're looking at Turkey, the official report and told this makes 14 attacks since the start of this year.
It's getting nasty in there. Some of those attacks have been claimed by Kurdish militants, and others have been attributed to ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, the Islamic State. However, they're going by now. You know, they have an entire media wing. They've got their own press office and TV station.
I believe it. I mean, PR has always been a part of modern warfare. Very much so in the 20th and 21st century.
Yeah.
Again, propaganda is a key tool in this day and age. Because you need to be able to, even in an insurgency, you need to be able to replenish fighters. Because you're going to lose people. That's just a fact of war. And so you're going to need to push recruitment, and how you do that is through propaganda.
And they're definitely doing so. They've always had the social media thing. It's definitely a different kind of guerrilla war that they're fighting. You know, this is not something that really anybody in the planet is used to. This is new stuff, and we're definitely having issues combating the way that they do their recruitment. You know, the way that they're issuing their propaganda is the powers that be are playing whack-a-mole.
It's the world has gotten so much smaller thanks to social media.
Yeah.
So you can do your recruitment as a known insurgency on a global scale now.
That's frightening. But it is the way it is.
Yeah, no, but there are plenty of disenfranchised people that are just looking for a cause. And if you can put a good enough spin, you can get them to fight on your side. That's the facts of today's war.
Yes, Tokyo Rose, Mom Van is, you're absolutely correct with the Tokyo Rose propaganda.
Dead on.
Yep. That's spot on. Spot on with it. But they were less about chopping people up. I mean, some of that was done, but this is with the age of YouTube and cell phone cameras and video and things like that. I mean, it's insidious just how quick these messages can go out there.
Again, technology has made everything, for the most part, more convenient. Including propaganda. Mm-hmm. And another thing when it comes to the violence inherent in some of their propaganda, well, we have just looking here in the States, not any place else, just here in the States. Look what scared people in the movie theaters back in the 20s. And look what scares people now and we put on screen now.
Yeah, there has been a bit of an escalation, hasn't there?
Dracula was absolutely terrifying to people in the 1920s. The universal horror thing, no, people were genuinely scared. And now, in order to really get a jump out of people, you're looking at stuff like Saw or Green Inferno. The degree of violence necessary to get a visceral reaction from an audience is so over the top now, and a lot of people are desensitized to violence just because it's something that we consume on such a regular basis. It's not just one form of media, it's all media, and it's all part of our culture now.
That's definitely up for another conversation, just how far we've come. I mean, many people would say that, you know, we've just become so depraved or whatever, you know.
It's not really depravity, especially if you look at it through the lens of history.
Yeah, but people don't look through the lens of history. They look through the lens of their morals, you know, the lens of whatever they've been taught. I mean, we can armchair quarterback and, you know, sit back and look relatively loftily at the situation and say that, you know, this is that, and oh yes, well, can't you see this? But the people that have their own agendas, they're going to paint it with another broad brush.
But it is up to the educated to educate others.
Yeah.
That is a responsibility.
And that is why we're here to try and at least pick it apart and, be as unbiased as possible, or at least biased in the direction of fact. I think that's where I would like to put my bias.
So, yeah, no, I'd like to be on the side of facts, though, as you know, facts have a liberal bias.
Yes, they do tend to. They do tend to. And if you disagree with that, go ahead and send us an email at oreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com or send us a voicemail angrily at 470-222-6759.
Now, go ahead, give me examples. I'm looking for an argument.
Well, no, we're looking for a conversation. Come on, talk with us.
I'll do an argument. I prefer a conversation, but I can do an argument.
Well, the conversation may get heated. You never know. You might get both. Out of it. Okay, so we're going to come back to the Brexit from last week's show because it was a little bit still too hot. Not really sure what was going on. And, you know, I'm still not exactly sure what's going on, but
there's a lot to unpack.
In the tradition of this show, we're going to follow the money.
Okay? That really should be our catchphrase. Well, radio, follow the money.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess we could put that out there. It's just such an effective tool to go and pick apart things because it is the number one motivation of everyone around here. Everyone.
I just had a wonderful image. If somebody out there in Internetlandia can take and use the our owl image and just have it, you know, have it have legs now and just following a trail of currency. That would be great.
Clutching dollar bills or cougarans or whatever in its claws.
Just a number of different international currencies and just following it.
Nice. That would work. I would probably pay something for that. So make it happen. Make it happen, artists out there. Okay. So in following the money, let's look at the very first thing, which is the UK Independence Party leader admitted that his the bold claim of the whole thing that he was trying to do, because they were a big part of this, was a giant mistake. He did this on the news as Britain awoke on Friday to the news that it had voted in favor of withdrawing from the European Union. I felt it's important to actually say that since people may not understand exactly what we're talking here with the Brexit, because that would be Britain leaving the EU. Britain exit Brexit. Yeah, I didn't coin it. They did. Anyway, voters were introduced to the new reality with a stunning admission from Nigel Farage.
Nigel Farage.
Farage. Yes. The pro-Brexit advocate who leads the UK Independence Party. Farage said that the Vote Leave campaign's signature pledge that leaving the European Union would allow for £350 million to be spent on the UK's National Health Service. That was
the NHS, which has been in controversy in Britain for about the past 6 months.
At least that.
The NHS has been a current controversy because they are understaffed and they are underfunded. Now, they do have a single payer healthcare system over in the UK, and unfortunately, with a lot of their budgets, they've been cutting stuff to their medical budgets, which blows my mind. And a lot of the doctors there are overworked to the point of being dangerous.
It seems to be a bit of a follow-on from some of the things that we're doing here in the United States with Obamacare and the rabble that keep wanting to gut anything that's even remotely like a nationalized healthcare system. I think we're seeing a little bit of those echoes over there.
Well, here's a quick rundown, because this heavily goes into why a lot of people vote leave when it comes to the NHS and this giant mistake, which helped push people towards voting leave. The average British person loves the NHS system. Mm-hmm. Their tax dollars go to their medicine. They don't have to take out additional insurance. They don't have to have that additional expense. It is taken through care of them through the government. And their single-payer system allows the government to negotiate contracts almost like we do with – no, exactly like we do with military contracts here. and try and get the lowest bid. Mm-hmm. Which helps every common citizen, because it means your medicine costs less.
Yeah, that's the typical thing. It's a collective bargaining. That still works as a thing.
It works. Mm-hmm. But since they've been getting such great deals on the contracts, the government has been putting less and less money into the NHS.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to be fair and balanced. The economic side of this reduced cost in medical care has made becoming a doctor less and less lucrative over there in Britain.
And we're seeing a lot of that over here now, too, with Obamacare. There's been a rash of physicians leaving the field because of regulation, and they aren't able to make quite
as much. We were already losing folks mainly due to two factors here in the States, and that is the cost of education and malpractice insurance.
Yeah, those were absorbed by many people,
Those were giant factors back, especially the malpractice insurance, which was something that really picked up in the 90s and drove an entire generation of doctors out of the profession.
Yeah.
We became
lawsuit happy,
But over there in the UK, the pay for being a medical professional has dropped significantly over the past couple of decades. And so being a medical professional is less and less lucrative. And also you have less and less free time since you're going into the NHS system. You are a public employee. Now, if you know anything about public employees here in the States, sometimes they get screwed over by the government. People who don't really know how to do the job.
Yeah, by other public employees.
Yeah. Elected public employees screw the regular public employees. Mm-hmm. It's a cycle. And so it's come to the point where the NHS system, because of poor bureaucracy, is starting to collapse. And a lot of what the argument from Leave was, we're spending all this money on the EU. We are losing money hand over fist with the EU. In leaving, all that money would come back into our government, and then we could prop up our failing NHS system. That was a bold-faced lie.
Yeah. Now, I said that it was 350 million pounds. The lie, the real big lie, is that that was 350 million pounds a week. A week that they were thinking. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculously large amount of money. And it's all just a pack of lies, man. So when pressed by the Good Morning Britain host Susan Reid, who said that 17 million people had voted to leave the EU, partly on that bold promise, Farage repeatedly stalled as he attempted to disavow the campaign's pledge. Quote, do you think that there was other things that people will wake up to this morning and find out aren't going to happen? Reid asked. So, yeah, there's could be some interesting things going on there, and we will continue to follow up on this tale and see where the politics lead. But as we continue to follow the money, now we're going to get into the weeds a bit, okay? And
deep weeds.
Okay, so global. The tiny little island nation that once ruled the world has definitely caused us some palpitations in the market, if you will. So just on June 24th, Reuters released a long list of things that went up and down. Global stock markets lost about $2 trillion in value on Friday. just on Friday, after Britain voted to leave the European Union, whilst the pound sterling suffered a record one-day plunge to a 31-year low, and money poured into safe haven gold and government bonds. Now, remember that whenever you move money, it costs something to move the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because somebody somewhere is going to get a fee for handling that. It's a transaction fee. So they have taken what money they had left. You know, the $2 trillion, that evaporated in speculation markets, basically. A lot of that's just gone. So the money that was left, you know, say maybe, if we're generous, $1 trillion of that left based on just market value itself. And then another $1 trillion went dark as it was pulled into areas that are no longer part of the markets. So whether it be
it was shored up in hard commodities.
Right. Which makes it not liquid anymore. So that is no longer money that can be...
It's no longer in circulation.
Circulated to make the economy move. So this is the beginning of a recession. Mm-hmm. A global recession.
Another one.
Yeah. So as we continue down here, the shockwaves affected all asset classes and regions. All. The safe haven yen jumped 3.8% to $102.36 after having been as low as $106.81. The dollar's peak decline of 4% was the largest since 1998. Emerging market currencies across Asia and Eastern Europe and South Africa's rand all buckled on fears that investors could pull out Poland's zloty. I love the names of some of these currencies. Rand, zloty, yen. Is Canada still calling it the loonie?
Yeah.
I know I will still call it the loonie, but, you know, their dollar's the loonie. Okay, so Europe's safety plan, the 10-year German government bond, surged with yields tumbling back into negative territory and a new record low. MSCI's broadest index of Asia-Pacific shares outside Japan slid almost 3.4%. Tokyo's Nikkei had its worst fall since 2011, down 7.9%.
That's a hit to the Ghiblis, folks.
Now, also, if you remember, not too long ago, China's stock market made a lot of billionaires poor.
Mm-hmm.
It went down like crazy. Just on speculation, really. They just lost their perceived value. Stock market's a vicious thing. It does keep the world moving, but it's vicious. It's so vicious. So, investors stampeded into low-risk sovereign bonds, with U.S. 10-year notes up around 1.5 points in price to yield 1.5718%. Earlier, the yield dropped to 1.4%. The rally even extended to U.K. bonds, despite a warning from the ratings agency Standard & Poor's that it was likely to downgrade Britain's AAA credit rating if it left the EU.
It has. It is now a AA credit rating.
Oh. Wasn't America dropped to a AA as well?
America was dropped, and then we recovered.
So we're back at the Standard & Poor's AAA?
Yeah. We are back at AAA, but that happened 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And
that was all threats of the government shutdown and
defaulting on our loans. That wonderful government shutdown led by the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
that hurt us in significant monetary ways. And this has significantly hurt all of Britain.
Yeah.
Because the S&P downgrades your entire nation's credit, it means it affects every single bank that is tied to that nation. Their credits drop.
Yeah. Okay. So the rally even extended. No, wait, I already said that. Wait, I didn't. Yes, okay. Yields on benchmark 10-year gilts, another currency, fell 27 basis points to 1.096%. Or PCT. I'm not a financier, so some of these terms are going to be a little bit aloof to me. But I know a bad thing when I read it.
Yeah.
That's not good. So across the Atlantic, investors were pricing in less chance
of another hike in the U.S. interest rates. Even the Federal Reserve cited a British exit from the EU as one reason to be cautious about tightening.
Yeah. The cost for Wall Street to fund dollar-based trades rose on Friday to the highest in nearly 3 months. And something that we're all concerned with, oil prices slumped around 5% amid fears of a broader economic slowdown that could reduce demand. I did notice that the price at the pump did go down a little bit this week.
Oh yeah, no, it dropped here in Orlando about 2 cents.
Yeah,
US that's crude, across the board.
U.S. crude shed $2.51 to $47.60 a barrel, while Brent fell 4.9% to 48.42. Industrial metal copper sank 1.7%, but gold leaped nearly 5% higher, thanks to its perceived safe haven status.
Yep. That you're seeing more people going that cash for gold thing.
Yeah.
Now, Britain edition.
Yeah. So, Goldfinger was right, apparently. and also, all those folks out on watching Fox News, you may see yet even more of those buy gold commercials that are so popular on that network. And now I have a podcast.
Yep.
So Sprocket has
no financially. This is hit markets across the world. And with further speculation when it comes to Brexit, again, there's a lot to unpack here. You have, shortly after the results, in Brussels at the EU, you had a Scottish representative go, "We want to keep Scotland within the EU."
Mm-hmm.
That was the representative saying to the entire collected floor, "Scotland wants to stay in the EU, and that Scotland stands with the EU," which is how they voted. There is now there are meetings between the First Minister of Scotland, not quite President, not quite,
Prime Minister.
Scotland got a lot of concessions and powers in the 90s.
Yeah.
But the First Minister has meetings with members of the EU. I know they're supposed to be scheduled, this coming week. And there's already a large speculation within the media, as well as within Scotland's own parliament, about another independence referendum coming up, and Scotland leaving the UK and joining upon its independence the EU. That way maintaining for its citizens its EU status. Now, this all depends upon Article 50, if I remember correctly, being signed. This is where things get a little muddied in the politics over this entire Brexit.
Yeah.
Mr. Cameron...
Only a little, yeah.
The former Prime Minister of Britain, stepped down quite quickly after the result of the vote. Now, in order for Article 50 to be signed... And it has to be signed by the Prime Minister. You have to have the Prime Minister. And before that, Parliament has to discuss, have an actual discussion not necessarily a vote, but a discussion on the activation of Article 50, which has not been scheduled because Cameron stepped down.
Well, he's trying to distance himself from this because he was in favor of staying with the EU. For this in particular, he may stay in the seat long enough to get the wheels of progress moving again, especially since it's in his best interest.
Well, actually, no, it's not. Because one thing that British politicians care more about than those here in the States is this little thing called legacy.
Yeah. They want to hold on to Scotland.
Well, they want to hold on to Scotland. There's also part of the reason everyone is noting that Cameron stepped down is he doesn't want to be the prime minister that signs Article 50. Because whoever signs Article 50 is going to be saddled with that legacy. Every bad thing that comes from it will be on their heads in the history books. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you have a lot of people who were, let's do this Brexit, now distancing themselves from the idea of leadership.
Not a shock. Not a shock. This is pretty par for the course for this. Now, one thing that I heard, and, you know, feel free and catch me up on this, but I heard that there were some things that Scotland might just be able to force Britain to simply stay in the EU.
There is some discussion right now. A number of members of the Scottish Parliament, because Scotland has their own parliament, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of governmental powers, but they do not get full sway over all of the UK. It's more another tier of national government. It's weird. It's weird for us here in the States.
Yeah.
They're pouring over their constitution as well as the UK's constitution to see if there is a constitutional argument based upon Scotland's powers to force the UK to remain. As well as people pouring over what the First Minister's powers are in both implied and stated, so that the First Minister of Scotland may be able to push for a nullification.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this was a referendum. This is not like us amending the Constitution. This is just, hey, guys, we with this referendum, we're saying we would like to leave the EU. All this does is let Parliament know, hey, we want that Article 50 thing discussed. And that's all they have to do. There doesn't need to be a vote. They just have to discuss it.
Right.
But in its discussion, because of how their parliament's set up, there can be, through discussion, a call for a vote, and then they vote on it.
Right, and then it gets dangerous.
If they vote for Article 50 to be enacted, it forces the hand of the Prime Minister to sign Article 50. And then that starts the actual exit of the UK from the EU. That starts the entire process. Now, here's where things get...
But also, as we discussed last week, the Queen could also step in and say, we are not amused.
Yeah, she could, but from...
It's like, all of you children have had your fun. No.
But from the temperature taking by a lot of the local media there in Britain, it looks like she's not going to exert any sort of authority on that matter. Because she's entirely on the fence on this one. While she recognizes that Britain had an incredibly powerful place within the EU, and unlike a lot of people pushing for leave, understood that Britain had a great deal of sway and cachet within the EU.
Mm-hmm.
there is also this understanding of nationalism and history, and, you know, Britain being strong enough
to go
to stand
alone
on its own.
Yeah.
And at British pride that she also understands and is sympathetic towards. So she's pretty much gone, this ain't mine. It ain't on me. So.
Probably with a devious side eye. I can imagine her doing that. So, you know, without any actual words, she'll just look at you and, you know, dismiss you. So.
And again, this doesn't really...
It hasn't happened yet. That's the thing. It hasn't happened,
and it hasn't really... To the most of the royals, while this has affected them somewhat monetarily, most of their money ain't liquid.
That's true.
So they're some of the least affected.
Well, yes,
established landed royalty.
But that land that they're so titled to, the perceived value of that land just went down too.
Perceived value. But here's the thing: land holds its value a lot more than many other things.
Yeah.
Primarily due to the fact that we don't make more of it.
Unless you're in.
Unless you're in Dubai.
Unless you're in Dubai.
Where we make islands and do all sorts of crazy.
Yeah, or Japan, or China. China's building some islands too. But
that's incredibly significant undertaking.
Yeah.
So for the most part, we're not making more land.
No, not for the most part. No.
And so land holds its value exceptionally well.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just going to have to keep looking at it. Because this obviously... If we just follow the money, this is affecting us dramatically.
Until they really established who the new prime minister is, we're not going to see much forward action on this. However, the speed of UK government can be so quick, but also can be slow.
Yeah.
It is so elastic that it makes Americans' heads spin.
It certainly does at that. It certainly does at that. Okay, so with that, let's get on to history. Fred did scour the history books for us a little bit and came up with a few gems. So in 1867, Canadian Independence Day, the autonomous Dominion of Canada, a confederation of Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and the future provinces of Ontario and Quebec, was officially recognized by Great Britain with the passage of the British North America Act. In 1947, Mr. X article appears in Foreign Affairs. State Department official George Keenan, using the pseudonym Mr. X, publishes an article entitled "The Sources of Soviet Conduct" in the July edition of Foreign Affairs. The article focused on Keenan's call for a policy of containment towards the Soviet Union and established the foundation for much of America's early Cold War foreign policy. In 1984, PG-13 rating debuts. On this day in 1984, the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, you might have gotten a notice from them on downloading something that you shouldn't have, which oversees the voluntary rating systems for movies, introduces a new rating, the PG-13. Red Dawn, released August 10th, 1984, becomes the first movie released with a PG-13 rating. Interesting that it was Red Dawn. Didn't know that.
But it makes sense, especially within that era for film.
Yeah. In 1997, Hong Kong returns to China at midnight, July 1st, 1997. Hong Kong reverted back to Chinese rule in a ceremony attended by British Prime Minister Tony Blair, Prince Charles of Wales, Chinese President Jiang Zemin, and U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. A few thousand Hong Kongers protested the turnover, which was otherwise celebratory and peaceful.
No, I remember that quite well. There was, it was kind of funny because the Chinese government went out of its way to court favor with a number of notable locals. The one that was most covered was Jackie Chan, who, to most people living in Hong Kong, he has the beloved moniker Uncle Jackie.
Yeah,
he's everybody's uncle in Hong Kong. He really is. And them approaching him and go, please don't leave. The government literally came to Jackie Chan and go, please don't leave. Please.
He was born in Hong Kong, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I think in Hong Kong or nearby, but that's where he made his bones within the film industry, especially the local film industry, which is based in Hong Kong. I mean, if memory serves correctly, he was actually in a number of Bruce Lee's films, the most notable scene being within Return of the Dragon, I believe.
Where
he is one of the students that are fighting early on in the film. It was him, I believe, versus a very young Sammo Hung sparring, and you'll see the two of them fighting.
Quite possible. I think you're on the money on that one. Also, in 2002, two planes collided over Germany. A Russian Tupolev 154 collides in midair with a Boeing 757 cargo plane over southern Germany. In 2002, the 69 passengers and crew on the Russian plane and the two-person cargo crew were all killed. The collisions occurred even though each plane had a TCAS, traffic collision avoidance system, collision avoidance equipment on board, and everything functioned correctly. Things just went bad. And with that, I believe that we have a logical fallacy. Would you like to take it for us?
Sure. Today's logical fallacy is the moralistic fallacy. The moralistic fallacy is the opposite of the naturalistic fallacy. The naturalistic fallacy moves from descriptions of how things are to statements of how things ought to be. The moralistic fallacy does the reverse. The moralistic fallacy moves from statements about how things ought to be to statements about how things are. It assumes that the world is as it should be. This, sadly, is a fallacy. Sometimes things aren't as they should be. Example, have you ever crossed a one-way street without looking in both directions? If you have, reasoning that people shouldn't be driving the wrong way up a one-way street so there's no risk of being run over from that direction, then you've committed a moralistic fallacy. Sometimes things are not as they should be. Sometimes people drive in directions they shouldn't.
The rules of the road.
The rules of the road describe actual driving practices, but not everybody obeys those.
No. The reality of the world is usually a much darker place than what it ought to be, especially if it's what you perceive it to be. So, let's see. And voicemail.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye!
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
If you're scientifically literate, the world looks very different to you. It's not just a lot of mysterious things happening. There's a lot we understand out there. And that understanding empowers you.
If you base medicine on science, you cure people. If you base the design of planes on science, they fly. If you base the design of rockets on science, they reach the moon. It works. Bitches.
That's right. It works. Okay, so Earth has a new moon. Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing. It's a quasi moon. It just it's a small object that happened to fall into our gravity well, essentially. Astronomers have detected a small asteroid that doesn't seem to want to go away. Called a quasi-satellite, this new companion circles around the Earth as it orbits the Sun. And it's going to stay that way for the next few hundred years. Technically speaking, this newly discovered asteroid, dubbed 2016 HO3, is in orbit around the Sun. But it makes that annual trek, but as it makes that annual trek, it's also circling around the Earth. It's too far distant to be considered a true natural satellite of our planet, but it's a good example of a quasi-satellite or near-Earth companion. So this little guy, which measures somewhere between 120 to 300 feet or 40 to 100 meters across, never ventures too far from Earth as it orbits the Sun. Asteroid 2016 HO3 spends about half the time closer to the Sun than Earth and then passes ahead of our planet. The other half of the time it falls behind. It's also a tilted orbit, which causes it to weave up and down on the orbital plane like a bobber on choppy waters. And NASA's Paul Schodes put it in a press statement, quote, "In effect, this small asteroid is caught in a little dance with Earth." And I think we've got a little video here.
Okay.
Oh, that's weird.
So it does a little hula.
It does a bit of a hula. So just as the Earth is going around, it also just kind of wobbles a bit. It's strange. So it's caught in our wake, I guess.
Well, it's more caught around the Sun's, but in its position,
well, it's,
you're also affecting its gravity.
Yeah, well, it's following the Sun. You know, it is its primary focus, but it also is being dragged along in our wake. So on its path, you know, we're right there tugging.
Actually,
at it.
We may be the cause of the wobble.
Yeah. Probably are. Because we have our own tilt. So,
and as it passes us, if you'll note on the screen, and when you watch, if you watch this later, you can note on this video that as it gets near us is when it initiates that wobble. So, because of its trajectory around the Sun and it crosses so close to us, our gravity affects it and pulls it, causing the wobble.
It seems to have, at least the gravity well path that it's taking around the Sun, appears to be very circular. Ours is more elliptical, but thanks to, basically, it kind of looks like a spirograph. You know, for those of you that are of the right age to appreciate such things, where you'd have your pen in a hole on a gear, and that gear would then follow around another object, and, you know, then you'd make some interesting swirls as it went along. That's kind of what our little dance is doing right there. So it's neat. That's a neat thing. So yeah, we have a new moon. Nice to have a friend out there, I suppose.
It's nice to have a very interesting satellite, and this gives some both young and old astronomers another thing to study and another thing to keep their eyes out for.
Yeah, another nice near-Earth object. So
yes, for all those astrology fans out there, it has screwed up all the charts.
Thank you. Alrighty. So speaking of things that were screwed up that are maybe not necessarily the same anymore, areas of Central Park now happen to be more radioactive than five of the six Marshall Islands where the U.S. tested nuclear weapons in the 1940s. The most famous, the Bikini Island, is still at 184 millirems, and Central Park is clocked in at 100 millirems, which, by the way, is also the lowest habitable atomic level, radiation level.
How? Why? I need to know this now.
Well, there was Three Mile Island. But you too can find out more about this, well, at least a little bit about it. The article focuses solely on just the islands themselves now being less radioactive. It won't be too long before even the Bikini Atoll is going to be okay. But it's getting there. It's getting there. The Earth is much more resilient than many of us give it credit for.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
We are actually seeing the hole in the Arctic ozone layer starting to close back up.
That's right. That's right. If I had more time this week, I would have had a whole long spiel on climate change and stuff. And
that's another special, folks.
Yeah, maybe
look for that later.
I'll do that later. Okay. So, we can, quote, "We can take someone's memory, which is typically something internal and private, and we can pull it out of their brains," end quote. One of the team of neuroscientists, Bryce Cool, said, it might be Cull, I'm not sure the exact.
No, I think you're correct, Bryce Cool.
K-U-H-L. It's a mind-reading machine. Now, it's not really a mind-reading machine. This is a quasi thing. Again, you know, we're into quasi things this week. Basically, what they did is they showed 23 volunteers 1,000 color photos of just random people's faces while under an fMRI machine, a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, so that way the machine could watch exactly what their brains did as they observed each picture. And then they had a bit of an artificial intelligence program compile those, you know, to figure out, oh, okay, the brain does this when it sees that. So it then recompiled the images based on the neural pattern. They're a little weird. It's not quite an exact science yet.
it's the starting of being able to use neurology to compare memory.
Yes.
Or upload memory.
Yes. And for those of you that are fans of sci-fi, I highly recommend Daniel Suarez's books, Damon and Freedom TM. And the TM is trademark. Yeah. So in those books, later on, there is a computer program that is interrogating someone with the use of an fMRI. Essentially, putting them in a chair, locking them down, making sure they can't close their eyes, and asking them questions while looking at their brain. And the machine in this book first asks, "Is English your primary language?" No. Okay. "Is this language your primary language?" You know, and just goes down the line. And then the brain automatically will formulate a response before you have a chance to lie. Because a lie is a conscious event.
But we actually have seen, thanks to Mythbusters, that you can actually lie on fMRI and not get caught.
It depends on what you're lying about and how the question is asked. So as they continued in, to find out where he was from, they showed a map of the world. And basically the cursor just started going over and then got slower and slower and slower as it reached what country he was from. And then it was, "Ah, you're from here." And then the surprise zeroed it in. It's like, "Ah, yes, you are." "Thank you for telling me." Now, let's find out what city you're from. Does it start with A? Does it start with B? Does it start with C? And so on and so on and so on and so on. And it's like, ah, what's your last name begin with? Is it this and this and this and this and so on and so on and so on? And they nailed him all the way down, because then the computer was able to infiltrate all the public records, birth certificates, things like that, and found his family. So it was about at that point that he said, I would like to join you. Where do I sign up? Knowing that, this is not the kind of thing that I want to go up against. It's just too much. Just too much. So, yes, the proper use of this kind of thing, or the improper use of this kind of thing, is probably going to get more and more prevalent as we go on. Just a, you know, little heads up there. It's going to get interesting.
As we can make fMRI machines smaller and smaller.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So, though I wouldn't want to be in one. I wouldn't want to be on that end, so I understand completely. I have provided links to the article and also to the paper that, you know, has all of that out on the Journal of Neuroscience. JNeuroSci.org. It's out there. Okay. And in keeping with the artificial intelligence kick here, there's an artificially intelligent lawyer.
Named Ross.
Named Ross. It's actually just a deviation of the IBM Watson artificial intelligence. So,
like keyed.
Mm-hmm. So Ross, the world's first artificially intelligent attorney, built on IBM's cognitive computer Watson, was designed to read and understand language, postulate hypothesis when asked questions, research, and then generate responses, along with references and citations to back up its conclusions. Ross also learns from experience, gaining speed and knowledge the more you interact with it. Quote, you ask your question in plain English, as you would a colleague, and Ross then reads through the entire body of law and returns a cited answer and topical readings from legislation, case law, and secondary sources to get you up to speed quickly, the website says. In addition, Ross monitors the law around the clock to notify you of new court decisions that can affect your case.
So he's the perfect legal assistant.
He is the perfect legal assistant. But to have a legal assistant, is it that much of a jump to then go to a completely digital defense?
I don't think so yet. And here is where I will back up my argument. From my personal experience here in Orlando, there are professionals in the theater world here, mm-hmm. that host intensives specifically targeted at lawyers on how to sway a courtroom. There's a degree of showmanship, mm-hmm. as well as being able to read people's body cues, posturing, etc., to fully get a jury or a judge on your side and seeing things the way you see them. Mm-hmm. So while you can have all the case law and knowledge, there is still a distinctive human element to our justice system.
There is, but will there always be?
Always uncertain.
Yeah.
But
this is taking the letter of the law to the final degree.
But as long as we still have jury trials, and as long as we still have judges, there's going to be a human element.
I am the law.
Judge Dredd may be right around the corner, but he might have Ross somewhere up in his head. So this
it's in the HUD.
It's in the HUD. It's in the HUD, indeed. Okay, and with that, did I have that? Yes, there we go. And there we go. Okay, So with that, that's it for this part of the show. And we will then be live at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time next Friday, about this time, barring any unforeseen technical difficulties. F you, XSplit Broadcaster, and all of your woes with Avermedia capture devices. If you want to know more about that, go ahead and just email me, and I will tell you all about the little gory details of why this show was late. So, anyway, the second half of the show will drop about Wednesday morning in the RSS feed and all of your podcast aggregators out there. In the meantime, let's have those conversations continue on the web. Ask us questions. Do whatever you need to do. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's orellyradio.com for all the links right at the top of the page. So you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, and subscribe to the YouTube and the Twitch channels so that you never miss an episode. Of course, you can also watch us live, as hopefully you have today. You never know. And then you can also participate in the chat room and tell us what you think, what's on your mind, and all that good stuff. Let's see. Oh, yeah. If you've stayed this long, then, you know, maybe, just maybe, you want to give us a hand. If you have a few dollars to spare, you can contribute to the Patreon and get early access to the show releases and even maybe some special perks here and there. And, you know, just follow the Patreon link on the webpage. That'll take you over to patreon.com/orellyradio. And you can make also a one-time donation via the donate button on the webpage. If you can't fit us into your rainy day funds, do us a solid and share the show and leave us a review. Hopefully a nice, positive 5-star review. You know, yeah, we like those. We like those. And we're always looking for new ideas for the show. How about you share what's on your mind? Shoot us a note over to orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Or if you're the more talkative sort, how about a phone call? 470-222-ORLY-6759. And, you know, we're always able to take your call or your text there. Can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Common Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of incomptech.com. We will now enjoy a 10-minute intermission while we do things that human beings do. And then if you're watching live, then we'll see you for part B. Thanks, everyone.